Appendix D, Environmental and Terrain Considerations for Fire Support. The sections of this appendix are designed to be a quick reference resource of information on aspects of environmental and terrain considerations that affect FS. Section 1 begins with FS considerations in urban terrain. Section 2 covers FS considerations in a maritime environment. Section 3 covers FS considerations in mountainous terrain. Section 4 is devoted to operations in the jungle. Section 5 covers FS considerations in desert operations. Section 6 covers night operations. Section 7 discusses continuous operations, while Section 8 covers cold weather operations. Section 1, Fire Support Considerations for Urban Operations. Urban operations are typically planned and conducted on or against objectives, on terrain where man-made construction or the density of population are the dominant features. The FS planners recommend EFSTs to support the division and core scheme of maneuver. Often the role of FS in an urban environment is to enable subordinate and supporting units to get into or around the urban area with minimal casualties. This enables the respective unit commander to have maximum combat power with which to close with the enemy and finish the fight. Appropriate FSCMs are essential because fighting in urban areas results in opposing forces engaged in close combat. Planning. Planning considerations for fires in support of urban operations include: exchange FS and observer plans with adjacent units. Conduct target mensuration for precision munitions. Coordinate for collateral damage estimates as necessary. Develop an observer plan to include observation posts in buildings, locations of laser designators, and overwatch of trigger points and gun target lines. Plan EW assets to defeat explosive threats, disrupt enemy information collection, reconnaissance, and surveillance efforts, and detect enemy use of the EMS for targeting purposes. Identify location of hazardous sites, both above and below ground, such as fuel and industrial storage tanks, gas distribution lines, seaburn sites, and any other area where incendiary effects of detonating artillery and mortar rounds will start fires or release seaburn or other hazards. Identify the general construction or composition of the buildings and road surfaces. May impact the type of munitions used. Where does building masking, overhead power lines, or towers degrade GPS and compass functioning? Will the use of obscurants and illumination favor friendly units or the threat? Will buildings or structures require FS personnel to carry or use equipment not normally carried, such as field expedient antennas, climbing rope, wire gloves, axes, or sledgehammers? Plan for radar coverage. The Fiscord and Fires cell planners often find their major challenges to be in providing FS to numerous smaller engagements that, while separate, are part of coordinated larger unit operations. Prioritizing FS, sustaining FS, and positioning and repositioning FS assets take on greater significance in urban operations. Characteristics of urban targets. The enemy has many covered and concealed positions and movement lanes, and may be on rooftops, in buildings, and in sewer and subway systems. Aerial observers are extremely valuable for targeting because they can see farther to detect movements, positions on rooftops and fortifications. Engagements on rooftops are planned for to clear away enemy FOs, snipers, communications, and radar equipment. Engagement areas are planned on major roads, at road intersections, and on known or likely enemy positions. Also, restrictive FSCMs, such as RFAs and NFAs, are needed to protect civilians and identified restricted areas. Identifying and anticipating kill zones or EAs is critical to ensuring that indirect fire assets are in position to provide supporting fires. Practically, the ability and the utility of massed fires is affected in an urban environment. The natural restrictions in place due to the obstructive nature of urban terrain and the small unit operations prevalent in urban combat require an innovative and limited approach to the delivery of fires. However, major road networks that offer high-speed avenues of approach into and through an area are suitable for targeting to restrict the flow of enemy forces and supplies into the combat area. IPO leads to the identification of time-sensitive HPTs and is an important consideration for the Fiscord and the FSE. The commander or higher headquarters normally provides specific targeting guidance and prioritization for time-sensitive targets within the AO. Fratricide prevention measures. Fratricide prevention is a matter of concern in all operations. The risk of fratricide is much greater when visual identification and precise navigation are inhibited by either distance or reduced visibility. In urban operations, the very nature of the physical terrain creates a situation of reduced visibility, resulting in unique and significant challenges to combat identification and fratricide prevention. The challenge is the need to minimize fratricide without unreasonably restricting the ability to accomplish its mission. There are two basic causes of urban fratricide: procedural and technical. Procedural causes are typically failure of FS coordination. Technical failures may include failures of controlling equipment or mechanical malfunctions. Weapons effects. Because the conduct and coordination of indirect fires in urban areas is difficult, fires in support of the maneuvering elements are closely coordinated and planned in detail. Planning and coordination include considerations of force protection, weapons effects, psychological effects on the populace, and the potential for collateral damage. For air-delivered munitions, terminal control and positive guidance are required to ensure the delivering platform has acquired the correct target. Effective ACMs can ensure other missions, for example SCAR, can transit or operate in the airspace above and around the urban area. The effects of lethal munitions can be significantly different in urban environments. The characteristics of the urban terrain and the small unit house-to-house nature of urban combat affect both the results and employment of weapons. Specific weapons effects considerations for urban operations include the risk estimate distance and quantity of the munitions, the construction of the buildings, and the ability to engage the target. Calculated risk estimate distances are often not valid in urban operations. Buildings provide cover that can reduce blast and shell fragment effects risk distances to a few meters. Inaccurate or stray fires may occur due to projectiles deflecting off buildings, wires, or other objects. Bomblets, scatterable mines, illumination, and other ordnance payloads may also be diverted by objects or may have irregular patterns due to swirling upper or lower level winds around large or tall structures. Target acquisition and observation considerations. Urban military operations are involved with physical terrain, non-combatants, and infrastructure. Urban combat almost always will affect all three in greater or lesser degree, and the lethal and collateral effects of fires have the potential for great destruction and loss of life. In order to maximize desired effects of fires on the threat, while at the same time minimizing undesired adverse effects on the built-up area and its inhabitants, these fires must often be as precise as technology and planning will allow. Target acquisition. Target acquisition in an urban environment faces several challenges. Sensors and reconnaissance have difficulty penetrating the urban environment's increased cover and concealment, limiting both TA and battle damage assessment. Moving personnel or vehicular targets are normally the easiest to acquire. However, the cover and concealment provided by urban terrain gives moving targets short exposure times, requiring firing systems to act rapidly on targeting data. In specific circumstances, weapon locating radar TA may be more effective in locating hostile firing weapons because of the increased use of high-angle indirect fires. Targeting challenges are met by innovatively integrating reconnaissance capabilities. Air Force reconnaissance and surveillance systems contribute significantly to assessing the urban area. These information collection systems include manned and UAS. These information systems are vulnerable to weather, and staff weather officers should be leveraged to provide weather effects assessments for both the platforms and sensors based on current and forecast weather conditions. Air Force reconnaissance and surveillance systems can provide vital data to help assess threat intentions, threat dispositions, and an understanding of the civilian population. These systems also can downlink raw information in real time to Army intelligence processing and display systems, such as the Common Ground Station or Division Tactical Exploitation System. Observation. Ground observation may be limited. Consider placing observers on overlooking terrain outside the city and using external routes for observer movement. Allow additional time for observer relocations when rubble, downed electrical wires, snipers, and other obstacles and impediments to movement may exist. Observers may need to take routes around obstacles. Elevators typically should not be used to avoid becoming trapped in the event of power failure. This can require time-consuming stairway climbs to gain an adequate vantage point. Fatigue may become a problem. FOs should be positioned where they can get the maximum observation so that TA and adjustments in fire can best be accomplished. This is not necessarily on the tops of buildings. FOs may be placed on upper floors of buildings to improve visibility. The observers on rooftops are vulnerable to both enemy aircraft direct fire and artillery or mortar airbursts. Ground observation is limited in urban areas. Adjusting fires is difficult since buildings may block the view of adjusting grounds. Therefore, the lateral method of adjustment may be most useful in urban operations, The impact of initial rounds may be adjusted laterally until a round impacts on the street perpendicular to the forward edge of the battle area. When rounds impact on the perpendicular street, they are adjusted for range. When the range is correct, a lateral shift is made onto the target and the gun's FFE. Adjustments may be made by sound, although this can be deceptive due to echoes off of buildings. Using airburst rounds is another technique for adjustment. Consider the use of aerial observers. Aerial observers are effective for seeing behind buildings immediately to the front of friendly forces. These observers are extremely helpful when using adjusted fire because the observer may see the adjusting round's impact behind buildings. Aerial observers can also relay calls for fire when communications are degraded due to power lines or masking by buildings. Illumination rounds fired to burn on the target can mark targets, both visual and infrared, in the daylight amid the smoke and dust of urban combat. FOs must be able to determine where and how large are the dead spaces. Dead space is the area in which indirect fires cannot reach the street level because of buildings. This area is an enemy haven that is protected from indirect fires. For mortars and high-angle artillery fires, the dead space is about one-half the height of the building. For low-angle artillery fires, the dead space is about five times the height of the building behind which the target sits. Lethal fire support in urban areas. The physical aspects of the urban environment, such as the height and concentration of buildings, cause significant masking in dead space. Buildings that stand three or more stories tall hinder close indirect fires. Tall buildings can potentially mask several blocks of area along the gun target line of artillery, firing at low angles of elevation. The urban environment also affects the type and number of indirect fire weapon systems employed. Commanders may prefer high-angle fire because of its ability to fire in close proximity to friendly occupied buildings. More artillery systems may need to be used to ensure the responsiveness rather than the weight of fires. Careful positioning of artillery and mortar systems reduces the amount of dead space and permits units to establish more direct sensor-to-shooter links. Commanders may consider reinforcing units to include mortar platoons from units in reserve. This will increase the number of systems available to support units. MLRS dual-purpose improved conventional munitions rockets may be of limited use in urban areas due to their dud rate. Gimler's unitary rockets are well-suited for this environment due to their precision munition capabilities and low collateral damage. Requirements for high-angle fire necessitated by confined urban terrain and an increase in point targets make the vertical attack capability option afforded by Excalibur and Gimler's unitary rockets especially useful. Structures affect Army aviation attacks where the enemy is in contact with friendly ground forces. Vertical structures interrupt line of sight and create corridors of visibility along street axes. The result is shortened acquisition and arming ranges for supporting fires from attack helicopters that affect engagement techniques and delivery options. Pilots maintain line of sight long enough to acquire targets, achieve weapons delivery solutions, and fly to those parameters. Tube-launched, optically tracked, wire-guided heavy anti-tank missile systems require 65 meters to arm. The Hellfire missile requires at least 500 meters to reliably arm and stabilize on the intended target. Thus, attack helicopters firing from longer ranges improve the probability of a hit. Heavy smoke and dust rising from urban fires and explosions may hinder target identification, laser designation, and guidance for rotary and fixed-winged aircraft. The close proximity of friendly units and non-combatants requires units to agree on, disseminate, and thoroughly rehearse clear techniques and procedures for marking target and friendly locations. Ammunition and sustainment. In the absence of attack helicopters, CAS and related FS assets, ammunition expenditure is likely to be high. Moving large convoys through rubbled urban terrain and along narrow city streets can affect the sustainment effort. The FA may need to rely on several smaller sustainment convoys. Increased time is allowed for in the planning of logistics activities. Pre-stocked supplies, locally available supplies, and infrastructure services for power and transportation should be used as much as possible. Use local water supplies once they have been certified. Security and the risks of sabotage must be considered in the use of all locally procured items. Precision fire provided by Army aviation attack or appropriate joint fires may be employed to engage observable targets and minimize collateral damage. Remote designators need to be close enough to accurately designate, but far enough away not to be acquired by the laser-guided munition during its flight path. Consider using precision-guided munitions to defeat enemy forces in buildings or in fortified positions, and to target small enemy positions such as snipers or crew-served weapons. Considerations for the use of laser designators in urban terrain include correct positioning of aerial attack by fire positions and observation posts that meet any applicable angle T requirements. Focus on key buildings, avenues of approach, complexes, or terrain where use of precision-guided munitions is anticipated. Intervening tall structures may degrade the effectiveness of the laser designator. Maintaining a continuous laser track on moving targets is difficult. The presence of large expanses of polished, flat, highly reflective surfaces, such as windows, may reflect laser energy and pose a hazard to friendly troops. The presence of highly absorptive surfaces, such as open windows or tunnels, may degrade designator effectiveness. Because of a fluid flot, designators may have to reposition more often. Weather effects on the employment of laser designators and rangefinders. The mix of munitions used by indirect fire systems will change somewhat in urban areas. Supporting unit commanders rely on their fiscords to understand ammunition effects and to correctly estimate the number of volleys needed for the specific target coverage. Increased use of certain munitions, for example, Excalibur and other HE or smoke rounds, and precision guidance kit, delay, and concrete piercing fuses should be anticipated. Special considerations apply to shell and fuse combinations when buildings limit effects of munitions. Indirect fires may create unwanted rubble and collateral damage. Precision and precision-guided munitions can be used to minimize rubbling. The close proximity of enemy and friendly troops requires careful coordination of fires. Swirling winds may degrade smoke operations. White phosphorus may create unwanted fires and smoke. Fuse delay should be used to penetrate fortifications or tops of buildings. Point detonating fuses on delay typically penetrate only the first wall or roof of a structure. The Mark 399 concrete piercing fuse is used when added penetration is necessary. Use of visible illumination may favor the defender who lacks night vision devices. Illumination rounds can be effective. However, friendly positions should remain in shadows, and enemy positions should be highlighted. Tall buildings may mask the effects of illumination rounds. Illumination rounds fired to burn on the ground or on a building can also be used to mark targets for aerial support. Airbursts, variable time or time fuse, and improved conventional munitions are effective for clearing those antennas and enemy observers located on rooftops and for suppressing enemy fires. Variable time fuses may detonate prematurely due to the proximity of other structures. Observer-adjusted time fuses may be better to use among buildings with varying heights. If the area will be crossed by friendly or civilian personnel, units may choose not to use improved conventional munitions. Such circumstances include residual hazards created by unexploded ordnance from improved conventional munitions, which fail to function, or if the enemy is in a building with several floors which offer overhead protection. Scatterable mine effectiveness is reduced when delivered on a hard surface. Direct fire. Artillery may be used in the direct fire mode. Commanders, in consultation with their fiscord and FSEs, determine the parameters under which FA assets can be used as direct fire platforms. Normally, FA is employed in direct fire only where tanks, Bradley fighting vehicles, and other direct fire systems are not available to engage the target. In this case, subordinate and supporting unit commanders, in coordination with their respective fiscord and fire cell planners, direct the employment of individual howitzer sections to support the unit in contact. Commanders should identify their most proficient direct fire sections. Self-propelled systems can take advantage of the system's mobility to support multiple elements. FA used for direct fire will likely require shuttling between indirect fire and direct fire positions. One or more sections may need to follow a supported force closely if sustained direct FS is needed. Self-propelled howitzers are effective in neutralizing or destroying bunkers, heavy fortifications, or enemy positions in reinforced concrete buildings. Concrete piercing 155mm rounds can penetrate 36 inches of concrete at ranges up to 2,200 meters. If care is taken, self-propelled artillery can be used to clear or create avenues of approach. Due to the self-propelled howitzer's limited armor protection, infantry will be required to provide security from enemy snipers and anti-tank teams. Although towed artillery can be used in a direct fire role, it is not preferred because it does not have any ballistic crew protection. This lack of protection should not preclude the use of towed artillery if the situation calls for it, and the commander is willing to accept increased risk of crew casualties. For some direct fire situations, the light 105mm howitzer may be more adaptable, especially for fires against dismounted infantry on streets, or in open areas. Other direct fire considerations include adequate communications, protection, and positions. A dedicated radio frequency for the supported headquarters communicating directly to the howitzer section is necessary to control fires and prevent fratricide. A Bradley fighting vehicle and a squad of dismounted mechanized infantry, or a squad of light infantry with anti-armor weapons, should protect each howitzer, regardless of weapon type. The infantry must provide local security and prevent enemy ground assault, sniper fire, and anti-tank fire, for example, rocket-propelled grenades. The infantry must reconnoiter and occupy positions where the howitzer can provide FS. These positions must be free from enemy direct fire, but still allow direct fire by the howitzer on the target. Although self-propelled artillery systems seem formidable, they provide less crew protection than the Bradley fighting vehicle, and they contain large amounts of onboard ammunition and propellant. Self-propelled howitzers are susceptible to catastrophic destruction by heavy automatic weapons, light cannon FA, and anti-tank fire. The howitzer should provide the necessary support and then move to an alternate position to avoid being identified by the enemy. Overwatching infantry should always move ahead of and with the howitzer to prevent enemy ambushes. Positioning and movement. The urban area may affect the positioning of artillery. Sufficient space may not exist to place battery or platoon positions with the proper unmasked gun line. This may mandate moving and positioning artillery in sections while still massing fires on specific targets. Commanders protect artillery systems, particularly when task organized into small sections. Threats to artillery include raids and snipers. Therefore, firing units will have to place increased emphasis on securing their positions. Use of observation posts and listening posts is more important, as terrain allows the enemy to infiltrate and get closer to artillery positions. Personnel in the open or in vehicles moving through restricted areas are particularly exposed to fires from snipers and tall buildings. FA should be positioned outside of town on the edge of the urban area if possible. Existing structures should be used to harden positions. Barns and other large buildings can be occupied for concealment of weapons and equipment. Units should also be aware of the dangers presented by overhead and underground power lines, gas and water pipelines, and similar hazards, especially when combined with the danger of enemy counterfire. When placement in the urban area is necessary, howitzer positions among buildings should, at a minimum, allow for high-angle firing. Masking should be minimized. Positioning of indirect fire assets is difficult because of the predominance of concrete surfaces. Spades can be emplaced against a curb, or base plates can be sandbagged if ground is not suitable for normal emplacement. Airports, parks, athletic fields, and such may offer good firing positions. Cultivated fields may be too soft and muddy for use. Reconnaissance is more difficult. Armed reconnaissance parties may need to clear an area physically before occupation is possible. Maneuver or military police assistance may be required. Range requirements must be considered. Counterfire targets outside the urban area may be difficult to range from positions in the city needed for high-angle, close-supporting fires. Firing positions outside the urban area that allow excellent low-angle fires may be too distant to range counterfire targets on the far side of the city. Supplementary positions may be needed for counterfire and other missions. FA weapons may be placed in buildings or damaged structures for protection. However, building collapse and fire are possibilities. Overpressure can significantly increase the noise hazard for crews. A 105mm howitzer battery may have better mobility than larger self-propelled howitzers in confined areas and may be quickly moved by helicopter, unhindered by ground obstacles. Survey and maps. Map spotting may be difficult in large cities. The maps and diagrams used in urban operations are often a mix of available documents that do not use common datum. Existing survey datum and markers, especially in developing countries, may be inaccurate or altered. City zoning maps, tourist maps, and sketches from reconnaissance teams may be used with military maps. Street signs may be non-existent or may have been altered by the enemy. Higher units should acquire and disseminate high-resolution imagery to subordinate units. Forces may use unit building numbering systems and sketches for clearing areas. The staff, FISCORD, and FSEs must understand all of these problems and work with survey teams and FAFDCs to translate target locations and friendly force locations accurately into grid locations on the common datum. Firing units will have the same problems pinpointing their firing locations. The GPS may be greatly degraded due to satellite-to-receiver line-of-sight masking from buildings. Many more targets will be point targets, requiring increased target location accuracy. Thus, firing unit, observer, TA, and target area survey requirements will increase. Hasty survey techniques may frequently be necessary. Hasty survey is hampered by decreased line of sight. Magnetic interference from buildings and power lines may interfere with the establishment of directional control. Establishment of multiple survey control points should be anticipated. Placement of survey control points should be well thought out to ensure that rubbling or traffic does not destroy the points. Additional survey assets may be required, and additional time may need to be allotted for survey operations. Weather. Weather conditions, especially winds, can vary considerably from outside the city to inside the city. Tall skyscrapers, suburban homes, athletic fields, rivers, and other settings all have different atmospheric conditions, especially light and low-level winds. Low-level winds may vary greatly from upper-level winds and may fluctuate considerably and unpredictably. The Fiskorden Planning Cell should engage with the staff weather officer to obtain weather effects assessments based on current and forecast conditions within the urban environment. The Fiskord should coordinate the placement of any weather capability, such as weather sensors and weather observers, including MET teams, with the staff weather officer to obtain representative weather conditions. Communications. Structures and urban infrastructure reduce radio ranges. Use of wire, messenger, and visual signals should be increased. Antennas should be set up on upper floors to increase their range. They are vulnerable if positioned on rooftops. Existing civilian telephone systems should be used for unsecured communication. Wire and local area network cables should be routed through sewers and buildings for protection. Generators should be placed near existing walls outside occupied buildings. Units will have an increased dependence on satellite-based communication platforms. Commander's intent. The commander's intent imparts the vision as to how the operation should progress. Clear understanding of this intent by the Fiskord and FSEs ensures effective and timely application of FS to the operation and immediate and the tailored fires needed to deal with situations as they arise. The Fiskord and FSE use the commander's targeting guidance to develop ammunition requirements and restrictions. Counterfire. Counterfire is difficult in urban environments. Masking can degrade the performance of radars. It will be more difficult for air and ground observers to locate enemy artillery by visual, sound, and flash methods. Radar sites must be carefully selected. If radars are sighted too close behind tall buildings, they will be masked and lose some effectiveness. High terrain outside the urban area should be considered when possible. Counterfire ammunition requirements may increase if the enemy effectively uses buildings and available materials to harden and camouflage those positions. However, counterfire may be limited by the ROE and fear of collateral damage. Air and Army Aviation Support. Air and Army Aviation Support is an important aspect of urban operations. Although air-delivered fires from manned and unmanned fixed and rotary wing aircraft can positively and directly affect the conduct of unit actions in the urban area, the ability of aircraft to provide fires may be limited by the structural makeup of the urban location. FSEs should consider the use of supporting aircraft to observe, call for, and adjust indirect fires, and report battle damage assessment. Air interdiction, AI, can be a vital component of shaping operations in urban terrain. Often, AI of the avenues of approach into the urban area isolates the threat by diverting, disrupting, delaying, or destroying threat forces before they can be used effectively against friendly units. AI is especially effective in major theater war circumstances where restrictions on air power are limited, and the threat is likely to be a conventionally equipped enemy. In addition to setting the conditions for future operations and dominating the urban operation through firepower, the commander can use aviation support capabilities to improve and augment the urban transportation and distribution infrastructure. For more on aviation support to urban operations, see ATP 3-06. Non-lethal activities. Aspects of SEMA, such as electromagnetic attack, and non-lethal effects, such as artillery or air-delivered military information support operations leaflets, are not designed specifically to minimize fatalities, but they may be used with the same intent. Non-lethal activities can help the commander maintain the desired balance between protection, mission accomplishment, and the safety of non-combatants by expanding the number of options available when the use of deadly force poses problems. In determining non-lethal capabilities use and employment, the commander should consider risk, threat perspective, legal, ethical, and environmental concerns, and public opinion. Planning EW assets to defeat explosive threats, disrupt enemy information collection, See the discussion in Chapter 4 and FM 3-55, reconnaissance and surveillance efforts, and detect the enemy's use of the EMS for targeting purposes. A threat may interpret the use of non-lethal activities as our reluctance to use force. This may embolden the enemy to adopt courses of action otherwise not considered. Some non-lethal activities may have unintended adverse effects on the local population. This may arouse adverse public opinion. The targeting working group and targeting board must synchronize the use of non-lethal activities. Legal considerations for fire support and urban operations. The large numbers of non-combatants potentially affected by urban operations are a major legal concern and increase the requirement for knowledgeable and active legal support. Whether non-combatants suffer the negative effects of urban combat or benefit from foreign humanitarian assistance, there are legal requirements and ramifications to every aspect of the operation. Further, the impact military operations have on the local infrastructure must be carefully monitored. Some infrastructure provides service to non-combatants that, if destroyed or significantly curtailed, could result in their displacement or increase the level of human suffering. The laws of armed conflict restrict the targeting of certain infrastructure. The law of war consists of several general principles that must be considered by the commander in evaluating all uses of force. Four of the most important ones are discrimination, military necessity, unnecessary suffering, and proportionality. Discrimination. Distinguish between combatants who may be attacked and non-combatants who may not be attacked. Military necessity. Use only those measures that are necessary for securing the military objective as soon as possible, unless forbidden by international or domestic law. Unnecessary suffering. The prohibition of using weapons, projectiles, or other materials, which by their nature or manner of use, are calculated to cause superfluous injury or unnecessary suffering. Proportionality. The injury to persons and damage to property incidental to military action must not be excessive in relation to the direct military advantage anticipated. Rules of engagement. Legal factors are but one element of the ROE. National policy and political objectives also play an essential role in the drafting of ROE. Often the ROE will include some restrictions on weapons and targets and provide the commander with guidelines to ensure the greatest possible protection of non-combatants consistent with military necessity. Targeting considerations. One of the major areas of consideration in the law of war is that of targeting. There are few absolutes in targeting, but the application of the general principles applies. Commanders must confirm that targets support military objectives. The following may be in that category. Members of the armed forces having the status of combatants. Non-combatants who lose protected status by taking a direct part in hostilities. Objects that by their nature, location, purpose, or use are either military property or contributing to the enemy's war effort. Their destruction provides a military advantage. Although civilians, non-combatants, and civilian property may not be specifically targeted, incidental injury and collateral damage are not unlawful if caused incident to an attack on a lawful target, and the incidental injury and collateral damage are not excessive in proportion to the anticipated military advantage gained from the attack. Targeting issues are important not only in urban combat operations, but also in irregular situations where an enemy, in violation of the law of war, may use civilians to mask attacks or as unlawful combatants. Section 2. Fire support in maritime operations. The maritime domain is the oceans, seas, bays, estuaries, islands, coastal areas, and the airspace above these, including the littorals. JP 3-32. Maritime environments include littoral regions, divided into two segments, seaward and landward. Seaward segments include the area from open ocean to the shore, which must be controlled to support operations ashore. Landward segments are those areas inland from the shore that can be supported and defended directly from the sea. Maritime littoral regions are divided into five categories: enclosed and semi-enclosed seas, bodies of water surrounded by a landmass, islands, single landmasses surrounded by a body of water, archipelagos, groups of islands, open seas, unenclosed bodies of water, typically outside of territorial boundaries, marginal seas, portions of open seas or oceans that bound land masses, such as peninsulas, islands, and archipelagos. The maritime environment is generally a non-contiguous OE that requires joint execution. Army forces will likely be the supporting command, and rarely the supported command. Targeting in a maritime environment is extremely complex due to the adversary's non-cooperative nature, mobility, and integrated defensive capabilities. Maritime targets will normally fall under the target system naval forces and ports, although targeting and creating effects on military supply and storage, command, control, communications, computers, intelligence, petroleum, oil and lubricants, and power generation could have an indirect effect on the adversary's maritime operations. Maritime targets are usually deliberate, planned, scheduled, or on-call. Army integration with maritime forces includes, but is not limited to, the following. Contribute ISR deep sensing in support of find, fix, and track. Contribute to target development. Contribute lethal and non-lethal capabilities in support of maritime strike. Contribute to joint coordination measures, planning, and execution. Provide FS to the JTF. Provide FS to maritime component. Provide liaison officers to Maritime Operations Center. Provide FS to air component. Provide theater strategic and operational FS system liaison officers to the Air Operations Center, Master Air Attack Plan Cell. Posture Army capabilities to support maritime operations. Integrate Army digital fire systems within the joint force. Participate in joint digital fires rehearsals. Conduct FS technical rehearsals. Ensure protection planning of theater strategic and operational FS systems. Army fires assets may also be designated in a support role to other component commands, providing seed for aerial attack of island-based enemy forces or surface-to-surface fires to defeat enemy naval forces. Establish clearance of fires procedures on landing areas. Provide deep fires for forcible entry operations to defeat enemy A2AD capabilities. The joint force conducts maritime strikes and target actions to gain and exploit command of the sea, sea control, sea denial, and to project power from the sea. The Army supports maritime strikes by integrating Army capabilities with other service component capabilities. The joint force facilitates integration amongst all services to enable friendly freedom of action. This necessitates integrated operational and tactical C2, sensors, weapons, non-lethal effects, and support capabilities. Army FS organizations must incorporate their FS systems with other applicable joint elements. Additionally, tactical-level technical FS rehearsals should be conducted, when appropriate, to facilitate fire mission processing and execution. Army organizations and capabilities could be directed to execute FS and effects in support of the JFC or other joint elements, while also potentially being supported by joint fires and effects. For more information on joint FSCMs and maritime operations, see JP3-02, JP3-09, and FM30. Maritime Strike Force Package is a pre-planned on-call package specifically designed to support maritime targeting and strikes. Maritime Strike Package is executed by a mission commander and consists of three elements: tactical C2, support element, strike. Critical components of an adversary ship are radars, missile launchers, guns, ammunition magazines, control rooms, engine rooms, and hull. Upon assignment of the force package, rehearsal of concepts and battle drills should be executed to ensure roles, responsibilities, timing, and effects are sufficiently understood by all participants. When targeting adversaries' maritime forces, the most considered effects are firepower kill, F kill, gun kill, G kill, mission kill, M kill, sink/seaworthiness kill, mission control kill. Target engagement authority in a maritime environment should be delegated to a C2 node that has the highest situational awareness and the ability to expedite an integrated joint strike. For more information on joint FSCMs and maritime operations, see JP3-02, JP3-09, and FM30. Section 3. Mountain Operations. In combat operations, mountains generally are characterized by rugged, compartmented terrain, steep slopes, and few natural or man-made lines of communication. The weather spans the entire spectrum from extreme cold with ice and snow to extreme heat in some areas. Vegetation can vary from dense jungle to barren waste. Variability of weather over short periods of time and of vegetation from area to area significantly influences both maneuver and FS operations. Munitions. Munitions effects are affected by the environment and terrain. IPO helps determine where and what munitions are most effective. The following are munitions considerations for mountainous terrain. In snow, FA-delivered mines may settle into the snow off vertical. at temperatures lower than minus 15 degrees Celsius, very little settling occurs. Variable time and time fuses are most effective in most cases. HE, point detonating, HE delay, and improved conventional munitions are ineffective because at least 40% of the effects are muted by the snow. The phosphorus and white phosphorus, referred to as WP, can burn undetected in snow for up to 4 days. In rocky terrain, HE point detonating is very effective because it produces extra fragmentation from splintering rocks. Variable time and time fuses are very effective because the burst covers a larger area than HE point detonating on reverse slopes. FA mines are effective to deny the enemy the use of narrow defiles, valleys, roads, and usable terrain. When smoke and illumination are used, swirling winds make smoke employment very difficult to adjust and maintain. Close coordination is required with adjacent elements to ensure they are not obscured or that they are not highlighted. Mortars are ideal for targets on reverse slopes and over intermediate crests because of their high-angle fires. Airbursts on reverse slopes are extremely effective. Target acquisition and observation. The following are considerations when FOs are involved in mountain operations. The observers should be positioned on high ground and spread out to overcome terrain masks and compartments. The observers may need mountaineering equipment to get to the best positions, or they may be airlifted. Terrain sketches and visibility diagrams are useful to deliver fast, accurate fires and to identify blind spots. Heavy fogs or low clouds may obscure observation. Observers without laser rangefinders who are looking up tend to underestimate range, whereas observers looking down tend to overestimate range. Air observers are very effective to observe beyond terrain masks, in deep defilade and on reverse slopes. Complement the fist observers. Can be used to detect deep targets. May be confined to valleys and lower elevations because thin air at high elevations makes flying difficult. Radar considerations in mountain operations include: radars should concentrate on terrain that can be occupied by artillery and mortars as determined by IPO. Terrain masks can degrade the effective range of the radar. Additional use of ground surveillance radars and remote sensors may be required. More extensive use of shelling reports may be required. Targeting. The intelligence officer's IPO should identify the following: routes that can be used by the enemy to attack, withdraw, and resupply. Likely position areas for enemy indirect fire assets, C2, support assets, and observation posts. Terrain that is subject to snow slides, rock slides, or avalanches. These may deny the enemy use of roads and trails and may destroy elements in defilade. Positioning. Usually position areas for mortars and artillery are limited, and access thereto may be restricted. Because of the need to fire high angle, it is important that the mortars and artillery be positioned in defilade to increase their survivability. Positioning considerations include: helicopters should be used to airlift artillery into position areas. These air assets also may be required to provide ammunition resupply. Helicopters may be useful in performing survey by use of Doppler radar. Positioning along dry riverbeds is hazardous because of the danger of flash flooding. Towns and cities usually have flat areas, schoolyards, parks, stadiums, and so forth, that can accommodate firing batteries. However, these towns and cities are often enemy objectives and may be targeted. Most mountainous flatland is farmland and is difficult for towed artillery to negotiate from spring to fall. However, in winter, if the ground is frozen, farmland provides good firing positions for mortars and artillery. Close air support. Because the terrain forces the enemy to concentrate his forces along roads, valleys, reverse slopes, and deep defilades, CAS is very effective. However, the terrain also restricts the attack direction of the CAS strikes. The enemy also conducts IPO to determine the likely direction of the CAS strikes and will wait his air defenses along those routes. The FISCORD must aggressively identify the enemy air defense systems and target them to enhance the survivability of the CAS assets. Communications. Communications considerations in mountain operations include: place antennas on sides of hills or mountains. Make maximum use of directional antennas. Plan to use retransmission capabilities. Section 4, Jungle Operations. Jungle operations are usually carried out by infantry forces. FS may be limited to indirect fires and air support. Because small unit operations are commonplace, greater challenges accrue to the FS personnel at company and battalion levels. Munitions. In jungle terrain, most contact with the enemy is at extremely close range. If the friendly force has a substantial advantage in FS, the enemy will most likely try to come in as close as possible and maintain that close contact. Thus, the friendly force commander cannot use his FS advantage without inflicting casualties on his own troops. Therefore, a knowledge of the type of munitions best suited for the terrain and how to employ them is vital. For example, in Triple Canopy Jungle, HE delay penetrates the treetops and splinters the trees, creating additional fragmentation, splintering effect. Smoke has limited effectiveness. White phosphorus is effective as a marking round and in initial adjustments. Target acquisition and observation. The Triple Canopy Jungle makes observation beyond 25 to 50 meters very difficult. The jungle also makes map reading, self-location, target location, and friendly unit location very difficult. Experience from World War II, WW2, and Vietnam showed that FOs must be able to adjust mortar and FA fire by sound, because often they cannot see the rounds to adjust them. This sound adjustment is very difficult and requires experience. Greater accuracy can result from the recommended adjustments of two or more FOs. The battery FDC can help by announcing splash to let the FOs know when the round should impact. The observer then counts the seconds until they hear the rounds detonate. By multiplying the seconds by the speed of sound, the observer can estimate the range to impact. The speed of sound is approximately 350 meters per second. The speed of sound varies according to temperature, wind speed and direction, relative humidity and air density, but 350 meters per second should be used as a start point. The FO must determine the observer location and ensure that the battery FDC has it plotted. The FO then determines the direction to the target and selects a target grid 1,000 meters along the direction to the target. Using that direction and target grid, the FO sends a call for fire to the FDC. Add 1,000 meters to the FO's position for safety. When the initial adjusting round impacts, the FO uses that impact as a known point. The FO determines the direction to the round, measures the difference between the direction to the target and the impact of the initial round, computes the lateral correction, and makes a range correction if necessary. Using the shift from a known point call for fire, the FO sends the data to the FDC, reporting the new direction. If the FO's position location is poor, the initial round location will be poor too. The FO can use the initial round to redetermine his location. For example, the FO's call for fire told the FDC to fire grid 123456, direction 0200. The round impact is nowhere near the target. The FO then determines the direction and range to the burst. The FO plots a back azimuth from the burst and estimates range along that direction to replot the FO's position. Then, using the new position location, FO reinitiates the mission. Vietnam and World War II also showed that the first round in adjustment should be white phosphorus, because both the FO's location and the location of other friendly elements may have been doubtful. White phosphorus was usually fired first to avoid inflicting casualties on friendly personnel. Using a 200-meter height of burst can help the FO see the first round. The creeping method of adjustment is used exclusively during danger-close missions. The observer makes range changes by using corrections of 100 meters or less and creeping the rounds to the target. The observer must know where all friendly troops are to avoid endangering them. All weapons that will FFE are used in adjustment. For battalion missions, batteries should be adjusted individually. Marking rounds can be fired to help the FO determine his own location. The use of marking rounds also helps ensure that the FDC knows in what area the friendly unit is, which ensures more responsive fires. A marking round is usually white phosphorus fired 300 to 400 meters forward of friendly units at 200 meters height of burst. The FDC plots a target, fires a white phosphorus round, and sends the grid of the white phosphorus impact to the FO. The FO then has a known position on which to orient. Because of the close combat, laser rangefinders may not be of great use. However, night vision devices are extremely critical. Air observers. Air observers can be important in jungle warfare. They can detect enemy movements that ground forces have no way of seeing. They can act in concert with ground observers to deliver accurate fires on enemy elements in close contact with friendly forces. Also, the air observers can relay calls for fire from ground elements to the FDC. Air observers can help direct CAS assets against enemy targets. Because ground observers cannot see the whole battlefield, the air observer marks targets for the CAS sortie by use of flares, white phosphorus, or smoke. Caution must be taken, and positive identification of the target must be made. WLRs are extremely effective in the jungle, since most indirect fires are high-angle fires. In stability operations, many targets detected by the radars are fleeting in nature, shoot and move, and the radar must be tied in with an indirect FS asset to ensure quick counterfire. Also, most enemy indirect fires will be directed against friendly unit positions. Therefore, the radars should be oriented to locate those enemy fires. Targeting. Targeting is very difficult because of the triple canopy and the fluid nature of the conflict. Experience with the particular enemy will provide some targets indicated by the enemy's past performance and techniques. Plan targets to support the scheme of maneuver along roads and trails, at likely ambush sites, around clearings, at river or stream crossings, around built-up areas. Also, isolated units will prepare 360-degree defenses. Plan FPFs to support that defensive posture. Consider recommending to the supporting FA battalion commander a munition-specific required supply rate to support the operation. Positioning. Often, firing positions for FA and mortars are very limited, and some positions may be inaccessible by roads. While mortars may be dismounted and airlifted into position, artillery will be severely limited in its movement and ability to position. Platoons may have to be widely separated, increasing the difficulty of mutual defense and resupply. Each position must have 6,400 mil firing capability, regardless of weapon types. Remember that a position occupied too long is subject to ground attack. Also, the enemy will quickly determine the range of weapons in that position and stay out of their range. If GPS are not available, consider using a helicopter-mounted position azimuth-determining system or Doppler radar to survey air-inserted mortar positions inaccessible by road. Close air support. CAS can be effective in the jungle, but hard to control because of the inability of the pilot to see the friendly ground elements. Also because the combat is usually of such close nature, the delivery of the munitions must be closely controlled to avoid injuring friendly personnel. Pyrotechnics should be used to mark friendly forces and the target area. A Joint Fires Observer or JTAC should monitor the airstrike, but only a JTAC or FAC-A can clear an attacking aircraft. It is extremely important that the method used for this marking not be duplicated by the enemy. Strict security is required. Heavy bombs, 2,000 to 3,000 pounds with fuse extenders, can clear away the jungle canopy. Many cluster munitions are designed to penetrate jungle canopy. Depending on the type and quantity delivered, bomblets are effective against area targets consisting of personnel, light materiel, and armor. Communications. Communications considerations for jungle operations include: remember that communications in a triple canopy jungle are severely degraded. Elevate antennas above the canopy when possible. Use air observers or airborne command platforms as relay stations. Consider using directional antennas. Plan to use retransmission assets. Section 5. Desert Operations. The three types of desert terrain are mountainous, rocky plateau, and sandy or dune-type desert. FS planning and considerations vary significantly between operations in each type of desert terrain. Often those considerations resemble those for other environments, such as Arctic and mountain. The type of terrain in the AO must be analyzed before effective FS planning can be performed. Tactics, techniques, and employment of munitions are greatly affected by the different terrain characteristics. Restricted desert terrain can offer significant disadvantages for movement and emplacement of indirect fire systems, depending on the trafficability of the surrounding valley areas. Munitions. Mountain deserts' munitions effectiveness is the same as in any mountainous region, except that the considerations involving snow usually do not apply. The following are added considerations. HE point detonating is very effective because of the extra fragmentation created by splintering rocks. FA mines are very effective and should be used to deny the enemy the use of roads, valleys, narrow defiles, and level terrain. Smoke and illumination may be degraded by swirling winds. They must be closely coordinated with adjacent units to ensure that the vision of adjacent troops is not obscured or troops are not highlighted. Both smoke and illuminating shells can be used to silhouette the enemy. Airbursts on reverse slopes are extremely effective. Rocky plateau deserts. The following are munitions considerations in rocky plateau desert operations. HE point detonating is extremely effective. It creates extra fragments by splintering rocks. Variable time and time fuses are effective. Improved conventional munitions are very effective. FA-delivered mines are very effective and should be employed with the natural terrain to force the enemy into unnavigable terrain. Smoke and illumination may be degraded by high winds, but may be used to silhouette the enemy. Sandy or dune deserts. The following are munitions considerations. HE with point detonating or delay fuse is smothered by deep sand, which makes it ineffective. VT and time fuses are very effective. FASCAM are smothered by deep sand, which makes them ineffective. Smoke and illumination are effective and can be used to silhouette the enemy. Target acquisition and observation. Determining location is often very difficult in rocky plateau and sandy or dune deserts. Maps are often inaccurate, dunes shift, and heat waves hamper distance estimations. Where GPS equipment is not available, pace count, odometer readings, and resection from available key terrain features may be the best of a few options for self-location essential for day and night navigation. FOs can detect targets by observing dust clouds created by moving enemy forces. Dust clouds created by impacting rounds sometimes make subsequent adjustments difficult. Usually, adjustment of fires by an FO is enhanced when the initial round impacts beyond the target. Laser rangefinders must be used, especially when heat waves degrade distance estimating, by other conventional means. The FO should consider using smoke behind the enemy to silhouette him. At night, illumination burning on the ground behind the enemy has the same effect. The sameness of colors in the desert makes specific targets hard to spot. Laser rangefinders may need to be adjusted several times a day because of temperature changes. Most open desert terrain allows a faster or an unimpeded approach and more maneuver space for mechanized forces. Use of trigger points and long-range observation capabilities is critical for effective engagement with available FS systems. Fast-moving formations are best engaged with fixed-wing assets and attack helicopters. Increased equipment failure can be expected as a result of heat, sand, and dust. Especially susceptible are radios, automation systems, and other electronic equipment. Air observers can be used for TA, coordination of FS, and adjustment of fires in flat terrain or in a desert of rolling sand dunes. The difficulty of aerial navigation in flat desert terrain is a disadvantage that must be planned for. The absence of terrain features in an open desert makes aircraft more vulnerable to enemy air defense. Because of the ability to see great distances and the featureless terrain of an open desert, positive identification of friendly troops requires special measures. More than usual coordination may be required, with prearranged signals and procedures established for friendly force locations. Maintaining continuous communications on FS and mission command nets with aviation elements operating in sector is even more critical. Radars are highly effective in the desert. However, they may have to be repositioned more often because the flat terrain does not provide adequate screening crests. Targeting. A thorough IPO must be conducted to identify passable terrain for wheeled and tracked vehicles. Identify likely mortar and artillery positions. Assess the impact of wadis, gulches, and other significant terrain on friendly and enemy mobility. Identify likely enemy forward observation positions. Identify anti-tank guided missile systems and air defense systems as priority targets. Plan the correct munitions for targets. Improved conventional munitions and FA mines for roads and restricted terrain. FA mines to deny the enemy navigable terrain and to try to force him into wadis and gulches. Variable time on reverse slopes. Variable time and time fuses on targets in deep sandy deserts. Smoke during the day and ground-burning illumination at night to silhouette the enemy. Smoke and white phosphorus against likely enemy observation posts. HE with point detonating fuses on targets in rocky terrain. Positioning. Common grid. The limited number of available attack/delivery systems requires the use of a common grid based on the best available survey data. Terrain association techniques, map spots, may be inadequate for positioning indirect fire systems. Concealment, FA, and mortars should move under cover of darkness because enemy observers can detect the movement or at least the dust from the movement of vehicles. Resupply should also be conducted at night, preferably en route between positions. Appropriate color of equipment and camouflage systems is essential for effective concealment of firing positions. Emplacement in wadis and gulches offers the best concealment. However, it entails some degree of risk as the result of unexpected flash flooding. Size of wadis is relative to degree of risk. Movement, traffic ability through the dunes may be severely degraded. The absence of roads in the direction of our movement will further slow moves. Position area selection. Positioning on rocky soil away from roads reduces the dust hazard during air assault operations. Sandy deserts may be a problem for some towed artillery and mortars. Solid ground to secure some firing systems, platforms, or base plates and spades may be rare in certain areas. Close air support. Air support aircraft may be more vulnerable because of the lack of covered approaches. Suppression of enemy air defenses is very important. However, the greater visibility common in most deserts allows target engagement from better standoff ranges. Detailed planning for CAS is important because of wide dispersion of units. Marker panels or other visual or electronic signatures are required to help the pilot differentiate between friend and foe. Section 6. Night operations. Some specific reasons for night combat include to achieve surprise and to avoid heavy losses that might be incurred in daylight operations over the same terrain, to compensate for advantages held by an enemy with superior forces or air superiority, to counter the enemy night operations, to retain the initiative or freedom of action, to exploit the technological advantage of our forces at night over a less sophisticated enemy. Movement and land navigation are more difficult at night. This is largely because of problems with terrain recognition. If navigation aids, such as GPS equipment, is not available, maintaining direction while moving is extremely difficult at night. Target acquisition and engagement ranges are limited to the capabilities of night vision devices. Controlling the direct fires is critical at night. Control requires effective communications to ensure engagement of the correct targets. Fire support. The main consideration in supporting night combat with FA, mortars, tactical aircraft, and naval gunfire is the ability to detect the target and coordinate the attack. Illumination and smoke assets probably will be in short supply. If their use is critical to the success of an operation, the FISCORD must know the specific area in which the commander desires to use smoke and illumination and for what purpose. Plan smoke at night to degrade enemy night vision capabilities. If too little ammunition is available, take action to alleviate the shortfall well in advance. At night, the adjustment of fires without the aid of radars, artificial illumination, or sound ranging is virtually impossible. If adjustment of fires on critical targets is required, do it during daylight if possible. If not possible to adjust the target during daylight, allocate TA assets for adjustment of fires. The FISCORD plays a critical role if CAS, UAS, or attack helicopters are used in night operations. These weapon platforms may not be equipped with adequate night vision equipment. Their effectiveness will depend on the ability of the force to illuminate targets. Additional coordination between the FISCORD, G3, G3 Air, and ALO is needed to integrate sorties and plan illumination for their use. Night offensive operations. In planning a night attack, the commander must decide what type of attack to conduct. Their decision is based on the required FS, illuminated and non-illuminated attacks. An illuminated attack is used when the possibility of achieving surprise is remote, when the enemy has night vision devices, and where control of units overrides the need for stealth. Commanders often use non-illuminated attacks when the enemy lacks night vision devices, but devices are available to friendly forces. Another reason is when friendly forces plan to use stealth to achieve surprise and close on a position before the enemy discovers the attack. Even though the commander wishes to conduct a non-illuminated attack, always plan for illumination. It is executed only on the commander's authority. Execution of planned fires using stealth and surprise may be more important to the attack objectives than the effects expected by preparation fires. Use of preparation fires alerts the enemy to the objectives of the attack and may compromise any night advantages. However, always plan for these fires. The non-illuminated attack with on-call fires offers a better opportunity for surprise. Night offensive FS considerations include pre-arranged visual signals, such as handheld flares, that can be used for initiating or canceling fires of air support, and schedules of fires such as groups or series. When fires are shifted, they should be moved beyond the friendly unit limit of advance. Illuminating fires may not be fired, but should be planned. Time illumination over the objective to burn out approximately 300 meters above the ground. Illumination beyond the objective should be allowed to burn on the ground to silhouette the defenders on the objective and to provide a heading reference for friendly forces. Also, illumination can be placed on several locations over a wide area to confuse the enemy as to the exact place of the attack. Once used, illumination should probably be continuous because friendly troops will have temporarily lost their night vision. Smoke can be used to degrade enemy night vision devices. It should be placed in front of the enemy. Smoke also can be used when key terrain is to be bypassed. However, smoke on the objective during the final assault conceals enemy locations. Only thermal devices can see through some types of smoke. Place FSCMs on identifiable terrain. Place permissive measures well in front of friendly forces. Restrictive measures should be used minimally and must provide the safety required, yet not complicate clearing fires at night. These measures must be disseminated and understood by all friendly elements. Plan suppressive fires for the final assault to the objective and beyond the limit of advance to stop enemy force retreat or reinforcement. Night defensive operations. The effective employment of FS is critical to the successful night defense. As with the offense, daylight planning and coordination considerations are used in addition to considerations for night defense, which include Use on-call fires to engage enemy forces as they attack or probe the defense. Plan illumination fires, although the appropriate supported commander is the approving authority for defensive illumination fires. This is to preclude accidental illumination of friendly activity, such as patrols and engineer activities. When used, drop visible illumination above and behind attacking forces to silhouette them. Adjust fires, especially FPFs, during daylight if possible. Use smoke to slow, confuse, and disorient attacking forces. Plan FA delivered mines in coordination with the engineer to separate forces, disrupt formations, and plug gaps in the defense. Plan permissive FS measures as close to friendly troops as possible. However, measures should be placed on positively identifiable terrain. Plan restrictive measures, if required, on easily identifiable terrain to provide safety to friendly elements. Section 7. Continuous Operations. Physiological aspects of continuous operations include those factors that degrade the soldier's physical ability to function. Sleep loss and fatigue induced by night operations magnify stress. After 48 hours of sustained activity, loss of sleep becomes the most significant degrader of soldier performance on the battlefield. As sleep loss begins to accumulate, both physical and mental effects are observed in varying degrees. Most of the following effects can occur after 24 hours without sleep. Tasks may be omitted as a result of a momentary lapse into sleep, falling asleep with eyes open. Vigilance decreases rapidly, resulting in missed critical signals. Ability to focus on a task for more than a brief period decreases noticeably. Memory becomes faulty, particularly short-term memory. This makes it difficult to learn new information, follow instructions, or remember recent decisions. Response to events or instructions slows. One seems to be operating in a daze. The ability to formulate and make sense from information becomes severely degraded. It takes longer to perform simple tasks, such as plotting grid coordinates. Accuracy suffers. The ability to reason logically is degraded, which may result in snap judgments. Problems with communication arise. One has difficulty understanding or articulating even simple messages. A wide range of mood changes, characterized by depression, anger, lack of patience, and euphoria, can occur. Sleep loss is cumulative over time. The number of hours needed to recover is directly related to the number of hours sleep was deprived. As a rule of thumb, a minimum of 6 hours rest is required for every 24 hours without sleep. Fatigue is the result of excessive work and sleep loss. The latent effects of fatigue may linger for about 3 days following sleep deprivation of 48 hours or more. Section 8. Cold Weather Operations. Fire planning for cold weather operations is no different than that required for more temperate regions. However, the FS planner must consider that artillery weapon systems may have limited mobility in snow and ice. That will also affect ammunition supply and increase time to accomplish tasks. Munitions. The following are considerations in the employment of various munitions in cold weather operations. Make maximum use of airburst munitions, HE point detonating, HE delay. Improved conventional munitions and FA-delivered mines are ineffective in deep snow and unfrozen bogs. At least 40% of the blast from these munitions is smothered by the snow. Hexachlorethane smoke is not effective because canisters are smothered in the deep snow. White phosphorus is effective. However, phosphorus may burn undetected in the snow for up to 4 days and may be a hazard to friendly troops subsequently moving through the area. Overall, variable time or multi-option artillery fuses are good fuses for cold weather operations. However, snow and ice may cause them to detonate prematurely. Also, extreme cold may cause a higher dud rate. Extreme cold weather will affect the range of weapons. Low temperature may cause illuminating rounds to malfunction as the result of freezing the parachute and its components. Target acquisition and observation. Considerations for employing FOs in cold weather operations include: equip FOs with snowshoes or skis to allow them to move quickly. Relieve observers in static positions frequently. Update visibility diagrams regularly because drifting snow changes visibility. Use amber filters on binoculars and observation devices to reduce the incidence of snow blindness. Avoid using ground bursts that may be difficult to observe in deep snow. Observers in aircraft are valuable because they can see deep and are not as prone to disorientation as are ground observers. However, weather conditions may reduce the availability of aircraft. WLR's considerations when radars are used in cold weather. Extremely cold weather may degrade their operations. Remote sensors are rarely effective when used in deep snow. Targeting. Because of terrain and weather phenomena, target detection is difficult. However, ice fogs and snow clouds created by moving enemy formations will reveal targets. Also, tracks in the snow may indicate enemy positions. Close air support. The following are considerations in the use of CAS in cold weather operations. Frequent poor weather reduces the availability of CAS. The sameness of the terrain makes the marking of targets critical. Panels or pyrotechnics must be used to indicate friendly locations. Communications. Effective communications are hampered by electronic interference, weakened batteries. Conventional dry cell batteries are 40% effective below 0 degrees Fahrenheit, 20% effective below minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit, and 8% effective below minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. A similar problem exists for nickel-cadmium and lithium batteries. Frost from human respiration forms in the radio mouthpiece. Cover it with cloth or a sock. Survey. Extreme cold in Arctic and subarctic regions adversely affects survey equipment operability. Accuracies may be degraded and impact on transfer data, mast fire, and unobserved fire. Field artillery movement. Considerations affecting planning for FA cold weather movement include: consider route reconnaissance in FA ground and air. Determine ice thickness and load-bearing capacity before the FA crosses frozen lakes and rivers. Consider that a vehicle may be required to position towed artillery weapons used in air assault operations conducted into snowy areas. Plan for maximum use of aerial resupply.